Title of the message is Interfaith Jungle. I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 1, 10 and a couple verses, down to 13 it has written. I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree with one another in what you say, and that there is no division amongst you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and thought. My brothers and sisters, some from Cleo's household has informed me that there are quarrels amongst you. What I mean is this. One of you says, I follow Paul. Another says, I follow Apollos. Another one follows Caiaphas. And still another follows Christ. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Or were you baptized in the name of Paul? I want to use an article that I, out of Christian Century, that I liked. And it's about interfaith. And I thought it was going to be a rather easy message to fill in because I knew I was going to get home late. But it's turning out to be a little more detailed than what I thought it was going to be, but that's okay. But I want to share a little joke of some sort, and I hope it's not seen as a sexist male joke, but nevertheless, I watched a movie yesterday, Kisses for the President. It was a black and white. Has anybody ever seen it? Kisses for the President. Yeah. Anyway, it's an old black and white movie where a woman is elected president and he gets to be first lady. And I thought, wow, what an appropriate movie to watch. Anyway, she's doing a really good job and she gets elected and she's in there and she's fighting, doing the politics of the day or whatever it was. And her husband has a lot of problems with assimilating into his job and whatnot. And anyway, he doesn't necessarily like being the first lady. And so he finds different things to do. And anyway, as time goes on, the relationship isn't exactly what it should be. So they do finally find some time to come together and spend some time alone. Well, eventually she gets a dizzy spell and she falls down. And of course, the doctors all come around and this and that. Well, she turns out that she's pregnant. And the punchline that really made me laugh was at the end of the movie, it took thousands of women to put her in there, but it only took one man to take her out or to get her out. I thought that, I just laughed. I thought that was just so funny. Yes.
The idea today that would take her out is ludicrous.
It just made my mind go all over the place, and I just broke out laughing. I just thought that was funny. it was done in a, you know, it was a comedy. It was done in a way that was.
She's the one that said, "Yeah, it only takes one man to take me out."
Yeah.
She said that.
Yeah. And it was, I just laughed. I just like, wow. Oh, well. Anyway, I want to talk this week about this article that I have, Taking Religion to Heart. And it was written by Jason Mullen. I'll probably mess up his name. But he is a professor in the a Lutheran college, Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. And he is directs the college in the Presidential Center of Faith and Learning. And he teaches a course in interfaith dialogue or understanding interfaith religions and what have you, the diversity. I like the article because it's written and from a perspective of his inner thoughts. He writes it as I, you know, I am sharing this, I am this, his inner thoughts. And it touched me in a lot of different ways. I could relate to what he had to say very easily. He written it as from a personal thoughts. And he starts out like each year, he has new students that come there to take the course. And a lot of them assume that being tolerant and appreciative of all religion is what the course is all about. But the syllabus of the course has two goals, he says. One of them is to understand and to know something about a handful of different religious traditions and their beliefs and practices in their local community. And what he does is goes out, eventually he goes out, and I'm going to talk that's later in the article, and he tells the students to go out and go into different churches and mosques and synagogues and to experience he wants to go more on past the point of just a course of trying to be teaching people what the differences are. He wants them to actually go out and experience these differences. That's part of his goal. And of course, it runs into problems somewhat. It can, somewhat. And the second goal is to work through the problems and the promises that religious diversity poses for people that in their particular faith traditions. And so he wants to get beyond the point of, I accept everything. He wants to bore down into it a little bit more and actually define what makes each little tradition different. Even within Christianity, there's a lot of differences. And so each year the students come there and they're hyper-tolerant students, this is his word, and softly relativistic students. They quickly want to gloss over the religious diversity, and they half-heartedly want to applaud. You know that they're not really into it, but they're there because they some of them have to be, some of them because they want to go on. But I think people claim to be open-minded and inclusive, in part because they themselves don't know or understand what they believe. They don't know what they're being open-minded about or inclusive about. They just say they're inclusive. But they don't really bore down into it and say, okay, yeah, I like this, I don't like that, I have problems with this. Lacking something to compare it with. They don't really have nothing within themselves or an understanding or a slice of the bread that they have and they don't understand, so they have nothing to compare it with. He says he starts out his course each year telling this story. Now this guy is a confirmed Missouri Lutheran, and he's an upright Lutheran when he is telling the story. He's more of a moderate and a progressive now, he says. But at the time when he was going to high school, he was this full-blown blazing Lutheran. And there was a girl that was Jewish there, and he liked her. And there was two things, he says, that he felt very deeply at the time. One, that she was a great kisser. And the other one was that she was barred from heaven because she didn't believe in that Jesus died for her sins. But the one didn't outshine the other one. So it kind of breaks the ice, he says, in his course, which I can see where it would. But he said eventually it leads to students sharing how they grow up in various different religions and faiths. You know, on some of the problems that he had, or the good things, and about maybe college roommates or whatnot that may have been Buddhists, they share, or a hardcore Christian, or a blended, some people grew up in a blended Jewish Protestant home, and this creates issues. It does, let alone different ethnics and what have you. He says, while there are many classes that foster religious literacy and education, but not the second goal, he said. Helping people to reflect on their own religiousness or the lack thereof in the light of religious difference. And I think that's very true. I can get a lot of courses on education, on various different religions, But when you go to try to get a comparison religion, a course on comparative religions and some of the problems, most of them don't go down into it real far. They'll show you each little slice, and they let it up to you to figure out what you want to do. Then and there's two problems that, again, there are two questions, or he says it has two problems. There are two questions that he deals with. And he says, can an individual step outside of their belief system long enough to appreciate the other? And will what one believes stop their understanding from growing? In other words, he's saying, if a person who knows what they believe and is centered, whether it's conservative or liberal, and can that person step outside of that to appreciate someone else's faith and religion without it affecting them in their belief system? We're a little more open-minded than a lot of different churches, so we say, well, that don't seem like a big problem. But you take in a lot of conservative, more traditional churches, it doesn't have to be conservative, but traditional thought, there's not a whole lot of leeway to step outside of that.
It's like learning, however. Everything you learn changes how you think and who you are. So if you learn more about other religions, it would change you. Maybe not to change
if you're involved in a traditional conservative thought, I'll use conservative thought, even liberals to some extent, they don't like that. You are only supposed to think this way and that's it. See, we understand it a little bit broader, so we don't see some of these things as a problem. But generally speaking, it is a problem. It's a big problem. So he asked this question again. I would simply rephrase it. That can a person step outside of that and still not be unchanged? And the question is probably no. You're probably not going to be. You're going to be forever changed. And that is, you know, here's a hardcore Lutheran, but he's a person who is a progressive. He's recognizing this, and he's teaching this course within a Lutheran college. And he does recognize all these problems that he has to deal with. The next problem is, does comparing different religions with all their many variances leave you with yours just another variation of the other? In other words, do you lose your speciality as you start opening up this view a little more?
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I took
you
a
do.
Course in college, American Religious Life, and we had to go to 15 different denominations in churches.
So when you started out, were you a traditional or were you more progressive?
I was probably traditional.
You probably weren't a hardline traditionalist though. Your mind was open to a broader view.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So you learned and grew out of that and got something out of that. But for some people that's not the case because they're taught that they're special and chosen and they're above everyone else. I was taught that growing up.
Why I say the other way is just because I think with different religions, you do find a similarity in them.
Okay. You hang on to that. I agree that there's similarities and there's difference, but he's gonna show a case and point here later on. One doesn't have, so there's no walls or you start breaking down these walls. And you start having a broader and broader view. Now, it reminded me of a bathroom long time ago when I was in grade school that had no walls or divisions in it. I didn't like it. It's kind of like the same way. You start tearing down all these walls, you're exposing yourself and what you think and what you believe. Also, I can remember a truck stop out in T5 out in Toledo years and years ago. It was a 76 who had this, for showers for the truck drivers, they had this, like, gym class. Yeah. No. No. I didn't like gym class, and I took a shower at one time, and later on they changed them. It's like, there's no way I'm going to do that. And all of that came rushing back when I did that. I hated gym class and the showers and all that.
So, I think everybody did.
Yeah. So all this kind of tearing down the walls of all this division is kind of like that. You're exposing yourself to a broad variety. And do you get lost in all of this? Do you lose your identity?
I think you can. Depends on... You don't have to, but it is certainly possible if your faith doesn't, if you don't know what you believe in.
So a person who is not well grounded and doesn't know what he or she believes can be easily manipulated to move and say, oh yeah, I'm accepting of everything, but not really knowing what they're accepting.
Or the opposite. You think you know what you believe, or you talk and believe that, but you just so hard staunch on what you've been told.
So now you begin a journey.
You act yourself, they don't know nothing, it's this.
But what happens to the people who retreat and say, okay, I don't want that, I'm going to retreat back into my religious faith? All that out there is just heresy. Yeah. Okay. All that's a heresy. And that's, I'm going to tell a story, another story coming up here that I just had a conversation this week, if I don't forget. He says, this, it helps the student, he said, in this process of where they're sharing, a lot of students do just what we're talking about. It starts to shake them up. They have issues with their family. They go home and they start having dialogue with their, they're no longer necessarily a hardcore Lutheran or whatever they are. And they go home and they start having conversation with their parents, and it starts becoming a problem. So there starts to be a little bit of, you know, animosity growing. And he uses the word that he tries to move people to live the experience more than try to just understand it. And he says they work all this out, or they start to working out with the word words that we are familiar with, fear and trembling. There's a certain amount of, as you journey, there's fear and trembling, and I would like to add guilt to that also. There is a certain amount of that that goes on, and it takes a long time to get rid of it. What? Do you ever get rid of it? It depends on how broad, how much you traveled. I mean, if you travel from a really, really conservative or a staunch traditional religion, and now you have a broad view, I agree with Carol. There's a certain amount of guilt all the time. There's still a certain amount of guilt that I deal with. It's like looking back and saying, okay, what if? I mean, you know, there's this questioner thing, you know, this whole questioner thing that's in our head.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of freedom in living your own truth.
Yes, but it's not free from its tethers. Well, that's because you grew up in a time where you didn't travel necessarily. You've changed over the years, but not to the point where you started out a conservative trap in your religious belief. You didn't start out in a conservative religious faith. Right.
I was lucky.
Lucky. Yeah. So by traveling, I mean in your mind, in your faith, and what you believe. You started out here, and you went way over here, and you had this big, broad spectrum. It does help you get a better view, I think, of things. It is helpful. Lucky, I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not saying that yes, you were spared a lot of the animosities and the fear and trembling and the doubt. But there's also a big learning curve that comes with it, too, of actually experiencing. I think, not that you don't experience. I'm not saying that. I have to be very careful what I say.
Go on, ride home.
It wasn't like anybody made you feel guilty for what you believe.
It's an inner guilt.
You know, I didn't have that with my grandparents and
right,
my mom and dad. They were
Yeah, they were happy that you lived. And I'm not trying to minimize your experience or anybody's experience, but...
No, I'm maybe lucky is the right word, but fortunate or grateful that I didn't have.
I think grateful would be okay. I mean, you knew how I grew up. I mean, some of the things that were said to me along the way, and you still carry them. You still carry them, and especially coming from your parents. Not that my parents weren't loving and appreciative. They were. They were good parents. So another couple of the questions that he tries to get burning issues and questions that he tries to walk his students across the hot coals of, as his words. How can I know and worship God in this way while also studying and respecting and even admiring those who know God really differently? How can I stand here while learning about and respecting and appreciating those who stand there? If you're going to have an interfaith dialogue, at some point you're going to have to deal with that issue. How do I deal with somebody who is different than me? Do I see them as equal? Or do I see them as this way or that way? Yeah, what?
You have to
deal with it.
You have to deal with it.
So in the process of dealing all this, do you just simply blend in? Or do you want to remain special in your own unique private stall in the bathroom?
Huh? You remain special,
but
you share.
I do agree that you can remain have a speciality or a privateness of your own individual faith and express that, but still having respect for other people. But we'll come to a problem here real soon. And here he says that he tries to get his students not to always have an answer. That you can't necessarily have an answer for everything. That you have to kind of live this experience out and endure through it. Rather than saying, okay, this is the answer and that's it. Then he goes into a couple of different categories of if you're going to deal with interfaith dialogue or why not, you have to deal with, he narrows it down to three things. There's probably more. But exclusiveness or exclusivism, inclusivism, and pluralism. How do you do that? Well, he says what he does to his students, I hope there's no water in there. What he does to his students, he gives them a whiteboard, and he tells them to go to make a drawing. How do you draw exclusivism, inclusivism, or pluralism? Well, exclusivism is real easy. There's one path to the top, and there's fire and brimstone here. You're either right, or you're on my path, one path to God, that's it. The rest of you are all going to burn. So, inclusivism is fairly easy too. You draw multiple lines, and you get rid of the fire. But how do you draw pluralism?
Circle.
You're brilliant. That's why I married you. That's one way. He doesn't really give an answer. How do you draw all the different paths and all the different things and all the multiple rivers that flow out from all these different ideas in a pluralistic way of thinking? That's the problem. Do you draw it as a mountain at all, this being a mountain? I say no. It's flat. Yes, exactly. You have to get rid of the mountain idea altogether. You can't have that. It has to be a level playing field. Or you have to see it as being level. He tries to get rid of all those type of markers that divide people up. That's one of his goals, too. We tend to want to mark things up. Let's see. Then we start dealing with some of the problems in which he looks at. Some religious faiths are not tolerant whatsoever. And one of the religions and faiths that he gets into is Muslims. And I'm not trying to get into a whatever, but he says, for some reason, there's a gentleman that wrote a book about this, Social Muslims, and he says, we have a tendency to trot out the modern progressive Muslims and say that they represent all the Muslims, when in reality they don't. He tells a story of a faculty meeting at a college who is looking for a professor to teach Islam, and there's women on the search committee, and this guy is from Iran, and he comes there, and he will not shake the hand of a woman. How do you deal with that?
You tell him goodbye.
But he ain't got the job.
Huh?
Yeah.
Or he gives another example of when you go into the community and you start going out and some of the students come there and they have different religions and faiths and they can express them in colleges. And the men go into this one room to pray and the women go over in this little corner over here somewhere and they can watch by a video. They're not considered to be equal. Or he says a story about how, in this case, in this happening, one of the men who thought one of the Islamic women's dresses was too short, and so he came out with a plastic bag and put it over her head. How do you deal with stuff like that? And they don't care.
I don't know if it's in power, per se, but it is part of their tradition, and I would just ask questions.
So you don't see it as empowerment, more so than they are holding up their tradition. That is a good point. They stand behind their tradition and say, this gives me the authority to do that.
Yes. And then you say, why?
And they say, what?
Why? Ask why.
I was told not to ask why growing up. You don't ask why.
No, you ask, in that case, I don't know if you would be asking a man that. He'd probably just look at, I don't have to explain myself.
Okay, then that's his response.
Yes.
To have your example of them coming to teach, you can't, or shouldn't, put them into a classroom with a mixed class of men and women because
why?
They're going to ignore the women or belittle them.
So
and your hand keeps going up and asking questions.
They will have to listen to it actually.
Yes. Yes.
Even if that means a little answer, they will answer you.
You just keep raising your hand.
It's a problem. It's a real life, living day problem today. This is no hypothetical. This is a real life problem.
Well, when I said in power, it's like the man putting a bag over the woman's head because he thought her dress was too short. No, you don't own me. You don't dictate what I do.
But yes. Narrow-minded, traditional. Okay, so how? Go ahead.
So are Baptists.
So are Catholics.
So
yes.
We have
Just point to Islam.
Generalization, I'm just trying to point that out. If you really care about generalizations.
I'm going to give you an example of a story.
Okay, there's a spectrum.
A what?
There's a spectrum to any religion or any school of thought. And regardless of what the title is for your spectrum, there's going to be a right and a left side.
Well, interfaith dialogue or interfaith expansion is trying to get rid of that right and left. Yes, they do.
If you're in an educational meeting, a department meeting, you've got people that are sitting on the right of their subject and their department and the left, and they're not necessarily very friendly with each other.
No. They don't. So how do you generate a dialogue out of that? I can be as open-minded as I want.
Right.
How are you going to...
Ask
So just by bumping into each other and having a why, or, you know, like you said, you just keep raising your hand, and so you wear that stone a little bit smoother and a little bit smoother and a little bit, it's like water going over a stone. I think.
We have a major crack in there while you're wearing it down.
I think you're right. It's going to take a lot of time.
It's not a fast process.
Right. Okay, go ahead.
I guess for most of that, I'm impatient enough that I wish that it could go faster.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I try to be as open-minded as possible, but I do find myself being not antagonistic, but impatient.
You pigeonhole yourself in not knowing or not intentionally.
Yeah, with people that will not change their views, but be open to that there are other ideas. They can believe what they want as long as they aren't trying to tell me that's the way it should or has to be.
And I can remember in school, this professor hated
So the questioner in Genesis, I think a lot of religions want to kill. The questioner, what we call the serpent, who questioned Eve, or the wisdom to start off with. There is a sense of that wants to be, you want, if you want to control somebody, you want to get rid of some of these parts that are in us. And then you have control. I'm going to ask one more question. I'm going to tell a story. So is the Bible narrow-minded, or is it inclusive or exclusive?
That's not a single thought.
Well, maybe I'll make that for next Sunday's message. I'll set that aside because it looks like it's going to be a little more detailed than what we're going to have in the next 5 minutes or so. I'll include that in something that I'm going to start. So I want to tell a story, and I'm going to close with this story. I met a gentleman this week. I was up above Horseheads, and I laid over at a truck stop. It's a little dandy up there going up towards Watkins Land. And I got up in the morning, and I usually always walk around my truck and before I start. And he backed in beside me. He was a feed truck, semi-feed truck, bulk feed for farmers. And he got out and took a picture of my truck. And then he walked on in, and then he came back out, and by that time I was walking around my truck. And so he asked me if it was okay if he took a picture. I said, oh, yeah, no problem. I have an old truck, and it looks good. I mean, it's an old truck. And a lot of people take pictures of it. It's nothing new.
It's a nice-looking truck.
Yeah. It is. I think so. It's old, though. Like me. Antique. He began to talk, and he had an accent. I said, well, are you a Mennonite? So I put two things together. He had an accent, and he was driving a feed truck. So I that's why I asked him if he's a Mennonite. He said, 5 years ago, I was in a horse and buggy. This guy was probably maybe 30, maybe not quite that much. He said him and his wife had decided to leave the Amish, and they went to Black Bumper Mennonites. Now, do anybody know what Black Bumper Mennonites are? Black Bumper Mennonites are next thing to Amish, but they have a car, but they can't have nothing shiny on them. All the chrome is painted black. The bumpers are black, everything's black. You know, nothing shiny. So the term that we always use is called Black Bumper Mennonites, because they're a step out of the Amish. Well, the Amish shunned it, so they can't go back. Shunning means that you can't have nothing to do with your family, friends, nothing that's involved in the Amish church. He wanted to keep moving on and go to a more liberal, liberal being, well, that's a relative term, within the Mennonite church. But she didn't. So they shunned him. Now they're married with kids. So they shunned him. Now he can't see, his wife can't talk to him, he can't talk to her, he can't talk to his kids, and they're in the middle of a big problem. Another issue is, he shared with me, I don't know his name, I don't really care. He said he spanked one of his kids with his hand and left marks on him. Children and youth got involved. He wasn't quite sure how they got involved, but they got involved. So he's gonna, for the first time in this weekend, real soon, he's gonna get to see his kids for the first time in quite a while. But here's a situation that two religious faiths will not communicate, will not work together. You're shunned. You leave us, you're shunned. You're done. He said he has to go get a psychological analysis, and he calls English. I don't know if you know what the term English means. It means non-Amish in the secular world. And he doesn't want to get it done by the English, per se, because he said they're only interested in one person, mostly the woman's point of view, and that's it. And so he's going to go and get one down somewhere around State College. There's a place that, a Mennonite-centered place that understands his situation, and he's going to go there, I guess, next week or whatever, real soon, and he has to get a psychological analyzed. And where does this, he says, where does that leave me? He says, I can't see my wife. I'm married to my wife. I can't see my kids because they shunned her. If she communicates with him and sees him in any way, they will shun her. And then she'll be out. And she doesn't want to leave these black bumper medics because she has friends and whatnot there. So where does that leave her? I told this week. This is happening right now within the Christian faith. So said Christian faith.
Sad.
It's sad. And so we got to talking about how all these different traditions that the Amish and the Mennonites have, like one suspender, hook and eye, you know, bonnets that are this long, and ones that are tied, and all this and that. And he said to me, what does that have to do with salvation? And we both said at the same time, nothing. Amen.
Spirit be the power that empowers us. Through Jesus Christ.